This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Soccer or football fans around the world are enjoying the building excitement over the World Cup, which is on to the quarterfinal round beginning today in Russia. The quadrennial event has been filled with nail-biting games, but also a fair number of injuries.
The way those injuries have been treated has led many to question whether FIFA, the governing body of world soccer, is treating the dangers of concussions adequately. Soccer is just the latest sport where head injuries have been the source of controversy. And, of course, it's not just elite-level athletes who are sustaining concussions.
Dr. Michael McRae sees many concussions in his work as a researcher and professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and he believes there should be caution rather than fear about the potential for head injury in sports. He is with us in the studio. Welcome back to the show.
And thank you for having me.
There is obviously a lot of talk about head injuries, traumatic brain injuries, concussion when it comes to sports like football, in which there is a lot of direct contact with the head. Are there sports, though, that we might not think about as necessarily being contact in the same way as a sport like football or hockey that we ought to be when it comes to traumatic brain injuries?
Sure. I think the simple answer to that question is yes, but perhaps with some nuance. So you're absolutely right that this topic or this the focus on sport-related concussion is something that has gone really from near absolute obscurity 15 or 20 years ago when you and I were participating in sports to now really mainstream household conversations across America and around the world as parents like myself evaluate the potential risks to young athletes and are making decisions about whether they should participate in certain sports. And I'll touch on that a bit here today too. But for the most part, even in a research paradigm, we try to bucket sports into full contact or collision sports like football, like ice hockey, where heavy contact is just a central tenet of the game. Then there are a number of sports known as limited contact, and that's basketball and sports like it, where we have the occasional occurrence of concussion, oftentimes by freak accidents, volleyball players who strike the post on the net or hit their head on the floor. But contact really isn't a central part of the strategy of the game. And then the third bucket are really non-contact sports. And right here in Wisconsin, a famous quote from decades ago was from Vince Lombardi, who once said, football's not a contact sport, it's a collision sport. We have surveillance and research activities across all three, full contact or collision sports, limited contact sports, and non-contact sports, to better understand this injury across the landscape.
When it comes to the limited contact or the non-contact sports, are there things that we ought to be looking at in terms of mitigating the possibility of concussion? Or do we accept that when concussions happen, these are generally freak injuries or collateral damage, if you will, and our focus ought to be just on helping the athlete recover?
I think the latter. So I also spend most of my clinical time seeing people from the general population who have various forms of concussion or traumatic brain injury that obviously sometimes happen in high-speed motor vehicle crashes, but a good many of them happen in freak accidents, falls at home, slips on the ice, something fall while you're doing a home improvement project or something. And the same could really be said for those non-contact and limited contact sports. The incidence of head injury in those sports is very low. The risk to athletes is essentially zero. And really, it's about promoting the overall health and safety of athletes participating in those sports, whether it's golf or basketball, without really a need for a major overhaul to prevent concussion.
There's no need for a soccer helmet.
That's correct. Absolutely.
As you say, there was a point at which this stuff was in the annals of obscurity, if you will. It is really not the case anymore. Just in the last 5-10 years, there has been so much more attention paid to it. How far has the research come in that period of time in terms of understanding what's happening to our brain when it's recovering from a concussion?
Well, we've made enormous strides, both in terms of the science of concussion, and what I like to say is how we'll all be judged in the end for, in the scientific community, is what difference did it make? And the good news there is that the research has really rapidly translated from science to clinical practice. So an example here is that many years ago when I was participating in sports, if you go back even 20 years, literally the state of the art for concussion assessment, I realize we're on radio here, was was someone raising two fingers and asking the athlete, if we asked them anything at all, how many fingers am I holding up or where are we, which were very crude and blunt methods for assessing concussion. And it was commonplace for an athlete to return to the field of play within minutes of their injury.
Right. Now there's something called the concussion protocol.
Absolutely. So over the years, applied studies by our group and others around the world have given us a better understanding of the natural course of recovery after concussion, both in terms of the resolution of clinical signs and symptoms. But we also now, if you can imagine, we've gone from how many fingers to using things like protein blood biomarkers to better understand how long does it take for the brain to recover. We've utilized those research findings to inform international consensus guidelines, as you say, to form concussion protocols. Nobody returns to play on the same day anymore. That is essentially unheard of at any competitive level. Once the player's been properly evaluated and there's suspicion of concussion, they are then removed and not eligible for return to play the same day. We also don't then flip a switch and return an athlete to the soccer field the next day. They go through a graded exertion program over a period of days where we can conduct some rehabilitative techniques and give them adequate time for brain rest and recovery before returning to unrestricted play.
Well, and how much of this is an understanding that there is really no one-size-fits-all approach, that each player's reaction or recovery from a concussion may well be different than the next?
That's a terrific point. Not only is the presentation and the course of recovery different across athletes, but the complexion of the injury also varies. This is a very heterogeneous injury, meaning some of my colleagues like to say that concussions are like snowflakes. No two are alike. One athlete may have a predominance of cognitive difficulties with very little headache or dizziness. The next athlete, perhaps even within the same game, may have real predominance of headache and dizziness, but they're cognitively intact. How that has really informed international consensus guidelines is we now use a multidimensional approach to assess concussion. It's not simply about asking an athlete about their symptoms. It's about conducting a detailed evaluation of their cognitive function, their motor function, and other neurologic function.
Talk more about these protein biomarkers that come into play.
Yeah, this is really an exciting breakthrough. And our group at the Medical College of Wisconsin, so we are studying the utility of both neuroimaging markers using advanced MRI technologies and blood markers of certain proteins that are known to be indicators of, for instance, neuronal cell injury or axonal injury in the brain caused by trauma. We're exploring the utility of these markers in both civilian neurotrauma patients with traumatic brain injury from car accidents, traumas, and falls, for instance, and in athletes with sport-related concussion. We find that in some of these markers, there is really a spike elevation within hours post-injury that are markers of injury, but where these markers may also have great utility as an indicator of recovery, for instance, 7 to 10 days later. And again, aimed at telling us not only, as odd as this sounds, not only when the athlete is fit to return to play, but when his or her brain is fully recovered and fit to return to play.
How difficult is it to study this, given that you don't want to give the general population or athletes or anyone a concussion to use as, say, a control group?
Yeah, so we've been at this a long time. Our group has been studying the effects of traumatic brain injury and sport-related concussion for about 25 years. And early on, it was very difficult. This was not household discussion 25 years ago, and we had a great difficulty sometimes convincing athletes and schools to participate in our research projects. Since then, we've probably enrolled 75,000 athletes. We have one project now, the NCAA DoD Care Consortium, where we've enrolled 45,000 collegiate student athletes and military service academy members, we have data on over 3,500 concussions. It takes a lot of work on the ground to have these surveillance systems in place so that when the injury occurs, we have a protocol that we can activate within minutes, engage them, and then a follow-up protocol over a period of hours, days, weeks, and months to follow their recovery.
How important is follow-up months down the road in terms of, A, as a researcher, understanding the kind of recovery that the brain is able to accomplish, and B, taking care of a patient who may have presumably mostly recovered after a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, but there may still be some damage there that that needs to be followed?
Sure. Really good question. To fully understand the natural history of injury, we used to think of this in terms of, you know, what are the effects of traumatic brain injury within hours or days? We've learned over time that the effects of traumatic brain injury might be detected differently at different time courses. So all of our studies now involve longer-term follow-up of patients and athletes. In the setting of sports, there's a lot of discussion about the potential long-range neurologic health risks to athletes. That's been talked a lot about in the media because of a select study of a small number of former professional athletes. Our data really indicate for your listeners who are parents like me of youth and high school athletes that the risk to your son or daughter or mine is extremely small and certainly much smaller than the benefit they realize from participation in sports. In the more severe form of traumatic brain injury in civilian patients who are exposed to motor vehicle crashes and more severe forms of injury, the recovery course is really on a scale of weeks to months, much longer than what we see in sport-related concussion, where the overwhelming majority of athletes achieve a complete recovery somewhere in the order of 1 to 2 weeks.
As someone in practice who presumably comes into the metaphorical contact with a fair number of both athletes and parents and also coaches, do you have more of an issue today with people taking this seriously or people taking it too seriously?
I would say for certain the latter. So like anything else in medicine and science, sometimes the pendulum swings a bit too far and then has to come back to center for the universe to make sense. I like to say that 20 years ago, I spent most of my time in the clinic arm wrestling with dads, typically, trying to convince them that their son or daughter needed a couple more days of rest before returning to the soccer field, for instance. We spend a great deal of time now convincing parents that their son or daughter is going to be perfectly fine, that they should start exercising, it's perfectly safe to do so, and that they're really at no great increased risk long-term should they continue participation in sports. Our research program at MCW has forever been based really on advancing the science, improving clinical practice in that translational model, but also promoting the benefits to young people of participating in competitive athletics.
What were the sports that you played growing up?
In high school, I played four sports. I played football, basketball, baseball, and track and field.
At this point, you know, some years down the road, do you reevaluate the various collisions and potential head injuries that you sustained when you were younger?
Oh, I'd be lying if I said the guys I played with in high school and after that, if we didn't have a joke or two about it. But I do have sort of a renewed perspective. But I'll be honest with you, that renewed perspective at my age is not focused solely on concussion. It's about my orthopedic health and my knees and elbows and shoulders. Certainly, I have my aches and pains, but I would not trade the experience of participation and the benefits it provided to me in my life really for anything at this point.
We have come a long way, though, since you know, somebody gets a big hit and they just say, well, he really got his bell rung.
Absolutely. And nobody, myself included, nobody is proposing that we go back to the way things were when I played ball years ago, again, where I mentioned it was really commonplace for athletes to return to the field of play the same day as they were injured. We believe that the science really has informed the international consensus guidelines. We've seen a significant reduction in the occurrence of repeat concussions. We're seeing athletes now. Buzz phrase here is that in about 15 years, we've gone from athletes being withheld from play for 15 minutes to now 15 days. And that's gone a long way in protecting the health and safety of our young athletes.
Dr. Michael McRae, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Michael McRae is professor of neurosurgery and neurology and the director of brain injury research at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's also a neuropsychology consultant for the Green Bay Packers. You'll find a link to more about his research at wuwm.com.